May as well get started. Good morning. I'm Matt Longjohn. I'm moderating the panel. I'm the National Health Officer for all the YMCAs. So the physician, if you will, kind of connected to this work, the medical officer kind of thing. Our session here is, as you've read in the book, hopefully why you got here. I have no disclosures to make. For those of you, welcome, come on in. For those of you who maybe don't know a bit about the Y, this is kind of how our structure looks on the map. Each of these dots is actually like the place where a CEO of an independent 501c3 gets their mail, right? So it's the CEO or administrative headquarters of just under 900 associations. So, you know, we are a federated network of 501c3s. Each of those 501c3s has to sign up for our 160-year-old mission and live up to brand standards and all those kinds of things. But they are locally independent, meaning that a local board of directors oversees the finances, has fiduciary responsibility. They can pick and choose from our national offerings as to what programs or initiatives they're involved in. So it's a lot like herding cats from the national level. We try and inspire, create opportunities and programs and, in some cases, reimbursement pathways so that WISE can be sustainable as they attempt to achieve their mission or go down this path that we think is nationally important. A couple interesting little facts beyond the ones that are on the slide here. Those 900 organizations have a total of about 2,700 facilities. Most of our associations actually are just single branch YMCAs, right? And you think about that as like, the YMCA on the Sioux Reservation or, the YMCA of a rural part of some part of our country, right? But in Houston, for example, there are 43 branches, I think. In New York City, there are about 30. Some of these organizations are $190 million a year, have $190 million a year operating budgets, whereas some are just a couple hundred thousand. So a lot of diversity there. East, west, small, large, urban, rural, north, south, etc. There's a lot of different variations in this movement. And about 80% of U.S. households, 75 to 80% of U.S. households live within 5 miles of one of our Ys. So this is all important context because over the course of the last 160 years or so, the Y has been growing and meeting community needs across all these different communities. And as times change, the Y changes. We were very instrumental in putting together war bond efforts, back in the World War I-II era. We helped, do a lot for people with homelessness and poverty after the wars. In the last generation, we've been very focused on childcare and out-of-school time programming. But when maps that looked a lot like this of obesity rates or diabetes were being shown at conferences like this, every presentation back in the early 2000s, the Y leadership, CEOs from some of those dots, got together and talked about what does the Y need to do, what does the Y need to change into to be able to meet our mission in the 21st century where chronic disease epidemics are running rampant. So a lot of time and energy has gone into, over the last decade, re-engineering Y training systems and program development processes and policies to be able to meet this mission in a new way, to address what we know are our community concerns through some novel innovations that you'll hear about today. We actually borrowed very heavily from the public health literature to expand and think about how the Y works. So the socio-ecologic model, if you think about the YMCA from maybe 10, 15 years ago, where lots of people in leg warmers or individual folks in programs were coming to a swim and gym type facility, they didn't see, the CEOs and those Ys didn't necessarily see this bigger picture. They weren't necessarily involved as advocates for health policy changes in their communities or at their state level. And so helping them understand how to go about that is part of what you'll hear about today. But as they went through that process, over many years and achieved some changes, they also realized, we also realized, that in addition to having that huge scale across the country, we also have a great opportunity for depth in our relationship with people who are on a health-seeking journey. And while the vast majority of people come through a YMCA's doors to learn how to swim or have a kid in an after-school program that's just generally healthy, some things like that are just promoting wellness, generally primary prevention. We also recognize that with our 22 million members and many other people who come through our doors or come to programs that are out in the community who are not members, that we are increasingly delivering programs that are evidence-based, have randomized controlled trials behind them that are specifically designed to reduce a certain kind of risk or even help people with established chronic conditions live well with irreversible disease or injury. So it's not just that scale, that breadth, but it's also this depth that we are trying to leverage as we utilize our national network to implement programs and practices up and down and right and left on this healthy living framework, where we've put the socio-ecologic model on the top and concepts of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention along the bottom, on the left. I'll get up and say a little bit more at the tail end here, but Monica's going to kick us off. I just wanted to put this slide up here for one more time and remind all our presenters. So, like, the first slide you'll see from everybody is going to be a little red circle around their area of this framework. So you can see eventually how all these things fit together. Monica's up first. Oh, I didn't read your bio. Excuse me. Monica Hobbs Van Leeuwen. I'm so slow. Good thing we have time. Joined the Y almost 8 years ago. We actually know that because we're celebrating her 8th anniversary at a party today, because she's also leaving us this week. She's going to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in the middle of the month. She joined YUSA in 2007 to design, launch, and execute various projects of YUSA's Healthier Communities initiatives. She currently serves as the Director for Healthy Communities Initiatives, which catalyze community and state-level leadership teams to ensure the strategies and policies are in place to allow people to make healthy choices where they live, work, play, and pray.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning.
Ah, Perry.
Hello. Perfect timing.
If you can find a seat.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for finding your way to this room this morning. Really appreciate you joining us. And hopefully, just as Matt said, we can have a conversation. We, of course, have some slides, but we're hoping to have some conversation about how the YMCA can help support the work that you're doing, or how it already is supporting the work you're doing. So as Matt said, I get the pleasure and had the pleasure of leading up our Healthy Communities initiatives here at the Y. I have no relationships to disclose. Just as Matt instructed, my very first slide is really the showing on our framework where the work fits that I am involved in, the work that my team works on. So our work has primarily been focused on primary prevention, helping to promote wellness for organizations, communities, and society. And so examples of those are really helping to change the vending policy at in organizations such as the YMCA, or in Boys and Girls Club, or in Parks and Rec departments, really improving early childhood and after school standards. You're going to hear a little bit more about our healthy eating and physical activity standards, known as HEPA. Really looking at the built environment conditions that help people live well in their communities. And these also include examples such as access to fresh fruits and vegetables, addressing food deserts, and play deserts, so safe accesses for places to play. And then on the societal level, we really do focus on things that really help impact those who live in either the entire jurisdiction of a state or in the entire region of a country, and even on the national level when you're thinking about national and federal policy. Amongst all of these issues that we've been working on is there's an undercurrent of our focus. Our strategic direction for over the next 4 years is really looking at chronic disease and obesity prevention, as well as trying to address solutions and opportunities to help those who are in our populations and in our communities that are aging, to help them age well and live healthy, and also really focusing in and targeting in on health inequities in our communities. So we all know that there's many factors that affect health in our country and the health of our individuals. What we know is that a medical care is really only 10% of what impacts our health. So what we at the Y have been trying to do is trying to figure out how do we really look at all of those drivers of health to really help those to live well. So we look at the environmental and social factors. We looked at, of course, family history and genetics and personal behaviors. Our main focus in our work at the Y is really around the yellow wheel, the driver around personal behaviors, as well as the blue wheel around environmental and social factors. We also are really trying to take an upstream approach, so really trying to look at all the social determinants of health and what helps enable individuals to live well in our communities, as well as address the conditions that provide or implement barriers to them living well in their communities. So what we really have tried to look at is looking at the entire socioeconomic, cultural, and environmental conditions, and all of those factors, as you could see, on how we address these conditions. So here's another map for you. We have multiple maps here at the Y. This map here is really all the spaces and places where we have been directly funding communities to do the healthier communities work. So we've been doing this work now for 11 years. We started back in 2004. There was a lot of conversation around how to help YMCAs really understand their role in community health, as well as the role in policy and advocacy. So that was the impetus of this work 11 years ago. We now have 247 dots on the map, if you will, as well as we've been funding 20 states to do this work. I'll explain a little bit about what it is. There will not be a quiz at the end of this to name the five initiatives of healthier communities, but just suffice it to say we've had various partners along the way. Our two primary partners has been the CDC as well as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And really what we've done is developed the model and then really created spin-offs of that model. So we've developed the model back in 2004, as I said, that was focused on funding YMCAs and their community partners. And then we realized and we worked with the CDC to say, look, we don't have enough dots on the map at the Y to actually address community and population health. We need to pull in other partners to do this with us. So thus was born the ACHIEVE initiative. That was our partnership with NACHO, as well as the Association of Chronic Disease Directors, as well as SOFI, Society of Public Health Educators, as well as the Recreation Park Association. So we basically gathered up other nonprofit national networks to do the work with us and to really try to create a widespread approach to this work. And then we also started working on some state-level activities with our statewide work, and then we were also part of one of the community transformation grantees as well as the REACH initiative. The REACH initiative, I'll just pause for a second, because that was the one initiative that we really had some more intentional focus on addressing health equities and really trying to look at what are the causes and conditions that help those live well and what are those social determinants around those causes. And so that was our intentional effort to really try to streamline and approach in on health equities. I'll go back for a second to talk about our community transformation grant work, just knowing that there's interest in the audience around our YMCA diabetes prevention program. Heather will tell you a lot more about that. But with our community transformation grants work, that was the first time that we really blended our approach around policy interventions with program delivery. So what we did there was really try to look at how do we help to build medical referral network systems in communities, and how do we actually try to engage different types of providers to provide the diabetes prevention program. So that was one of our efforts where we combined the policy and collaboration work along with a program delivery spread model. We can tell you more about that. So despite all the acronyms and the abbreviations and the what all of this work, the names of these initiatives are, when you boil it all down, there's the heart and soul of what the healthy communities work is all about. It really is a leadership model. We believe firmly that if you're trying to make policy changes in communities, you need to engage and gather those individuals who have the ability to make the policy change in their communities. So we try to engage the highest level leaders in their communities, so school board superintendents, CEO of hospitals, the heads of parks and rec departments, transportation departments, zoning departments, et cetera, mayors, to really try to make sure that those individuals that are part of the conversations have the ability to bring it back home to their own organization or entity. And we also know that the YMCA alone, of course, cannot do this, so that our approach has always been a multi-sectoral collaboration approach, really on pulling up together different individuals with different perspectives, diverse opinions on how to address the change in their community. It's always been about policy, and then we also know the secret sauce, if you will, the special sauce, is that it's all organically grown. So we have 247 dots on the map, and there's been 247 ways that it's actually played out and actually looked in the communities. Over these years, we've developed some leading practices. The reason why I share these is because I think that these are actually leading practices around what makes collaboration work well. So this happens to be the YMCA's version of these leading practices, but they really have rang true across lots of different types of collaborations in our country across with various different networks. We know that it has to start with a shared vision and a really spirit of inquiry. So you have to have the willingness and the interest and the passion to do the work. You really have to adapt to emerging opportunities. So we've never said in our work that a YMCA needs to specifically brand it and they need to create something brand new and they need to do something unique in their community. Rather, what we have said is we want the YMCA to work with partners to add value to what's already going on. We're not trying to replace existing opportunities or existing initiatives. Rather, we're trying to add value by really adding that policy focus to the work. We also know that we need to borrow and sometimes steal from others that are working really well and to really build your own identity in this work. Also about engaging cross-boundary leaders. So cross-boundary, by that we mean not just different sectors, but also different levels of leadership in their organization. And that all individuals in this work really needs to serve multiple roles. So sometimes there might be the role of actually setting the agenda and pulling together, ordering the healthy lunch, and sometimes there might be actually writing comments to a regulatory process around school zoning issues. We also know that we need to use our data that we have to really help to drive to guide our decisions, and not to necessarily be so exclusively focused on that data that we lose sight of those emerging opportunities or the political realities or even the passion, the interest of what's going on in our communities. And the most important piece of this, number 7 for us, is around distributing leadership. This isn't about a YMCA-led initiative. Rather, it's about a community-led initiative to make sure that the communities identify with what they're trying to do and that we're doing authentic community engagement, to making sure that we're trying to address this population that really needs the most help and support. As I said, the central components around here, around our Healthy Communities work, is really around policy and collaboration. We really believe that in order to affect population level change, you really need to start at the policy level. You really need to think about how all of those changes that interact and interplay with individuals' lives really make that impact on their lives and well-being. I've already talked about the collaboration piece. This is just an example. This is what we call our wheel of engagement. So this is what the different types of organizations and entities that come to the table with the YMCAs to do the Healthier Communities work. As you can see, it's a lot of different partners and players that are involved. This is just typical what a typical framework looks like. The most important part for us here, again, is that these are about collaborations. It's not about partnerships. The YMCAs are amazing at partnering with individuals in their communities. The YMCA is partnered with schools. We actually provide the majority of our after-school programming on school property or in schools themselves. And so those are amazing partnerships where there's a mutual benefit coming out of it, like the schools get an after-school program or the Y gets to run the program. So that's a great partnership. A collaboration is when the schools and the parks and rec and transportation and the hospitals all come together to try to solve an issue. And it's not about helping and supporting the Y, or helping supporting the schools or the hospitals. Rather, it's helping to solve chronic disease in the community, or childhood obesity, or whatever the issue is that community is working on. We've been able to document lots of success over these years. We've actually been able to document over 39,000 changes, and these changes are in various degrees of complexity, if you will. So we have changes around food options in schools, changes around how we actually address the built environment, so such policies as complete streets. Some of them are actually program implementations, such as Safe Routes to School programs that get implemented in communities, and as well as we've been able to really address lots of different types of access to healthy food healthy eating. Our primary focus over these years have really been around healthy eating and physical activity interventions and trying to figure out how we actually add value to that in our communities. So that we have some examples that I'm going to skim over because, again, Heather Hodge is going to talk a little bit more about our diabetes prevention program. But, again, this is the interplay between actually increasing the number of the accessibility to the programs in our communities, as well as increasing the affordability of food or the access to food in their communities. And then lastly, we have some examples around physical activity. So really trying to look at greater opportunities by renovating parks or building playgrounds, or really trying to address, again, the safe routes to school or the safe routes through communities. We have had some impact around tobacco cessation and mental health. I would say that hasn't been our primary target area over these, the last decade of our work in healthy communities, but we have been doing this work as well around looking at how do we help individuals live well by looking at smoke-free parks, for example, or secondhand smoke smoke exposure. There's also been a lot of different types of policy levels that we've been working on the state level. Just to pick out one of my most favorite ones of the recent past is in Washington State. There was an effort with our statewide Pride and Healthy Communities work to really help to create or to enable funding to go to schools so that there could be water filling stations in public schools in the entire jurisdiction. So that was a great example of trying to make sure that we have access to healthier drinks in that situation. So my last slide here is around what does success look like. It really is around, again, enhancing existing efforts. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel or recreate a brand new named logo or themed initiative just because it's our funding and we want to have that. Rather, we're really trying to add that value that's there. We're really trying to generate new systems and changes or try to increase the collaboration that already exists. As we all know, so many communities are very much engaged and very passionate about this work, and what we're trying to do is increase that collaboration and strengthen the depth of that collaboration. And then again, it's around building ownership across the community. So it's not about having these high-level leaders come into a community to tell the community what they need. Rather, it's engaging community members in the work to make sure that their solutions, their ideas are really framed around their needs, assets, and wants. And then it's also, of course, about getting meaningful and measurable results. And then once we get that, then we know that we've actually made an impact in our communities. So I think that's it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think whether it's the surgery patient you're talking about or the hypertensive that Valerie's talking about who needs a little counseling or just the kids in childcare, right? Like, we think this whole model is worth talking about. We thank you guys all for your time today. Been really great at yelling that story, but I will also say it really depends on which part of the country you're talking about. There are Ys that are really great, in Chicago that hasn't been the case in terms of the healthcare partnerships. That's not a strength of this particular association. They've been very focused on youth programming and family-based supports, juvenile justice and you've got great mission-driven programs around achievement gap work and recidivism. So Ys really do take on the culture and nature of their own community as they go about working towards their mission. But these kinds of things we're talking about today are certainly national trend lines. And so it might look a little different in each Y. Maybe they won't have all of these programs. Maybe they'll only have two, and the Y down the street will have four different ones. But it is a national issue that we're responding to. Any other questions? Two more, great. Go ahead, please. You're on the left. I don't just say who you are and where you're from.
Yeah.
My left. My left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in on Dr. Lilly's collaboration, and I didn't know that there's any advice or anything that you guys have seen with kind of that collaboration. I know that one of the biggest things I noticed was with community programs, like I know our diabetes program is very well known at a national level, but the hospital offers that as well. So I didn't know if there's any advice or anything that you've seen in trends with like trying to make that collaboration work, or because I know that the Live Strong program is doing really well with that referral process. I know that that is going really well, and they're now talking about doing a pre-read to help them with that. And if there's any advice that you could see that would
Yeah, it'll probably take more time than we have to give you an answer, but I'll say that some of the big things that I talk about a lot with wives that are going through those kinds of facility development and campus development type conversations is, and I don't know enough about the marketplace in La Crosse to insert name here or anything, but I think it's important for wives to think about the forces that are playing out within healthcare, even when they sit down at the negotiating table to develop a blueprint or something, such that the system you're referencing may be in fierce competition with another healthcare system, right across the street. And by branding a facility or working on a particular facility with one healthcare system, it could mean that the Y is shut out of achieving its mission in 30% of the community that doesn't have that healthcare provider as their normal provider of care. So, that being said, Y's have a lot of great conversations with these partners, and they find a way to make things work. They just have to be really careful about exclusivity. We're here for the whole community, not 40% of it. And so we have to figure out how, at the negotiating table, across the blueprints, how those kinds of competitive issues get worked out. But I'd be glad to talk to you after.
Can I add one other thing?
Please.
The one thing, like, on the diabetes side that you're talking about, so what we've often found is that healthcare doesn't understand that in the prevention program, we can't serve people with diabetes. So we're sort of saying we can take your folks who are at greatest risk, you who probably has great diabetes self-management services, we're going to give you everyone who doesn't qualify so that you can sort of segment out the chronic condition or the population you're trying to serve. 9 times out of 10, that's typically what happens. Or if they're both running diabetes prevention services, sometimes that can happen simultaneously because the hospital might be a 2-hour or 3-hour work stop twice a week, or something like that, with this intensive year-long program that's a behavior change. So we can follow up with you afterwards too, but there are sometimes, if just because they're doing the same thing sometimes doesn't necessarily mean they're actually doing the same thing.
Okay. The last thing I'll say, and I'll go to the last question, is that we've also seen 9 times out of 10 over the last 3 years that when those kinds of partnership systems get set up where both people are delivering programs, the higher cost model leaves the market within a year or so. So the hospital has high overhead because of radiologic waste and maybe unionized labor or whatever the issue may be in that community, eventually gains trust in the Y's ability to deliver that program for their patients and can do so at maybe greater scale or greater access to the community at lower cost. Last question. It's a huge amount. I think where we feel most helpful at the national office is when we hear about that early enough that we can help WISE go into those kinds of conversations looking really smart. What is going to be the operational cost of adhering to IRB requirements over the next 3 years? How do I make sure that blood sticks aren't happening in my facilities where my insurance rates might change. Things like that we can walk through, and a lot on design as well. On Valerie's in Valerie's group, there's a PhD. You know, we've got a lot of different people here, and as long as it's kind of a CBPR or a participant action research type model, where WISE could participate in authorship and things like that, we really help WISE quite a bit in that regard.
From the healthier community side too, there's a lot of different examples of the WISE partnering with academics in their communities to help do the evaluation as well as the measurement of the work to really conduct. So a great example would be in Columbia, South Carolina, around the healthy eating physical activity standards. They partnered with the USC, University of South Carolina, the Prevention Research Center, to really try to figure out how do you scale the dissemination of the healthy eating physical activity standards and make sure that the measurement outcomes were maintaining the fidelity, I guess, of the even of the measurement. So there's examples of that in the healthy communities world too, around pulling in all the different partners to bring in their skills, and there's so many different skill sets with academics.
Well, thank you for the questions. We are 2 minutes over. We can stay and take questions at the front if anybody else wants to ask them. But thank you for coming in again on a Monday morning.